The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and galleries please rise for a prayer by Chaplain Gawk and remain standing for a pledge of allegiance to the flag.
From the 18th chapter of Genesis we hear, is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Almighty God, help us this day to remember that you are a loving Abba, from whom we receive so much more than we deserve. Grant us an understanding of this world so that which we do and say is a witness to the wonders we see in your creation, given for our sake. And may we make good use of this time serving in this place for the people that we represent. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. Have a good day.
Thank you, sir. You too.
Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Searpoy, Crawford, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan,
Senator from the second is present. Senator from Jefferson, is present. A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 47th day, Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. The Senate.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as open fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Cole, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those opinion the motion shall prevail, say aye. Aye. Those contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this morning I have the honor of introducing some very longtime friends. I've known them 41 years, so yes, since that was basically when I was one. That's not exactly accurate. But here with us today from Hazelwood, Missouri, they're actually residents of constituents of the Senator from the 14th District. I'd like to introduce Don and Kathy Davidson. They are on my left and to your right, Mr. President. I've known the Davidsons forever. They also, Don is very helpful in my other job, in my agricultural job. We have actually taught him the difference between a horse and a cow over the last 40 years. And for a city slicker, he's learned quite well. I'd love the Senate to make the Davidsons feel welcome in the Senate chambers.
Will the guests of the Senator from Cole, Senator 14th, please rise and be recognized. Missouri Senate and Missouri Senate, make him feel welcome. Senator from Cape Girardeau, what region do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduce special guests.
Yeah, proceed.
On my right and your left, we have 15 seniors from Southeast Missouri State University. They're all social work students. They're also here with their professors, Dr. Judith Crocker Billingsley and Dr. Dana Branson. Please give them a great Jefferson City
welcome. May the Senate make the guests of the Senator from Cape Girardeau feel welcome in the Missouri Senate today and have a good day. Senator from Green, what region do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe in the upper gallery, we also have some students here from Evangel University. They are with their instructor, Lacey. Not only, I believe there's 10 students here with the Evangel University Social Work Program, and I would ask that they would rise and where they're seated and be welcomed by the Missouri Senate as well, as they're here
Will the guests of the Center for
and studying state government.
The guests of the Center for Green please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate and may ask the Missouri Senate make them feel welcome today. Further introductions. Senator Johnson, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduction of some very special guests.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Back behind me in the upper gallery, we have international students from across 18 different universities from the state. If you all would please stand. Mr. President, today is International Education Day, and these students are international students that have come to study at many of our universities and colleges across the state. They are representing over 50 different countries and here to learn more about Missouri state government. And I ask the body to please make them feel welcome.
Will the Missouri Senate make the guests of Senator Johnson feel welcome around the state and across the world? Thanks for coming. I appreciate, hope you have a great day. Further introductions. Senator from Boone, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduction of special guests.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Up in the upper gallery, kind of behind my left shoulder and to your right, we have students from Otterville High School here today with teacher Miss Audrey Connor. One of the students is Taylor Zumsteg, who is the chief of, who is the brother of my chief of staff, Alex Zumsteg. So I'd ask the body to make them feel welcome this morning.
Will the guests of the Center for Boone please rise and be recognized by Missouri Senate, and we hope you have a great day in the Missouri Capitol. Thanks for coming. Further introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole. Senator from Callaway, what reason do you rise?
I seek unanimous consent to introduce very special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your left and my right, I would like to introduce the Liberty Christian Boys Basketball Eagles of Wright City, Missouri. These young men recently won the Class 2A state championship during the Missouri Christian School Athletic Association match held on February 17th in Joplin, Missouri. The players are Andrew Voss, who is captain. If you guys would please stand. Let's see. Braden Wilmsmeyer, Braden Groh, Jacob Vaklovic, Cameron Hart. Oh, boy. Josh, I'm not sure how to say your last name. David Vaklovic, Logan Hart, Michael Foran, Dakota Ball, Noah Chambers, and their coaches are Kenny Hart, Matt Voss, and Dave Wilmsmeyer. I ask the chamber to please give these dedicated state champions a warm welcome.
Will the guests of Senator Callaway be recognized by Missouri Senate? Have a great day, and thanks for coming. Senator from Cole.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, and I would ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 556, Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill number 556 be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Bill 556 be taken up for perfection. As many of the opinion of the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those contrary say no.
No.
The ayes have it. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 556 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
The Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Bill number 556 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does the Senator care to explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Bill 556 is the motorcycle helmet bill. And what it does is repeal, depending on age and training, whether or not a person has to wear a helmet while riding a motorcycle. It also, this particular act in the past has been concerned that maybe some of these folks did not have enough insurance coverage or no insurance coverage, and it requires that they have medical payment insurance coverage of at least $1 million, and proof of such coverage shall be provided on the request of a law enforcement officer with their insurance card. And, you know, the debate continues. I've had this bill for, I guess, probably 8 or 10 years off and on, and over how effective helmets are, and depending on whom you talk to, some feel they're not very protective or about 17 miles per hour. So we hear in this building oftentimes a lot of discussion on individual rights and liberties, and so I think this is one that we can offer people a choice. If someone chooses not to wear a helmet on a motorcycle and has the insurance, then why should we say no? This would be an economic impact on the state of Missouri. It would be positive because a lot of riders avoid the state of Missouri because they ride in other states without helmets. Coming through Missouri, they got to try to either come up with a helmet or carry one with them, or store the helmet somewhere to where when they cross Missouri, it's available to them. Many of the bike rallies and things that occur with motorcycle riders, and a lot of the motorcycle riders are older, and they don't come to Missouri because of the helmet issue. For me, this is a constituent-driven issue. I represent Fort Leonard Wood, and a large number of our soldiers and even civilians there drive and ride motorcycles to work. And a lot of the soldiers are from other states that do not require a helmet. And so I've been approached many times over the years to, you know, please get Missouri caught up with some of the other states. So that's what it does, Mr. President. I think everybody's familiar, and that I'll try to answer questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 7th, what reason your eyes?
To inquire of the senator. Well, we have an introduction, then. Inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Okay, Senator, if we had someone standing up that wanted to do an introduction, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think she has an amendment.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. Well, I wanted to talk about this issue for two reasons. One, because I ride my Harley-Davidson all over the country and right. have ridden in, I'd say, probably 30 states out of the 50. The senator from the 25th has ridden in all 50, I believe. And I just want to say that I have never in any state that's allowed for no helmet to be worn, I've never not worn my helmet. I've right. always chosen to wear my helmet because I think that if you're going, you know, 60 miles an hour plus in an open carriage on your Harley with nothing but you and air between that pavement and you don't wear your helmet, then there's something wrong with your decision-making process on what you value your own safety at. But having said that, I also respect the fact that when I'm in states that allow for that, that state authority is saying it's your choice.
Right.
So I would encourage everyone who rides to wear your helmet, regardless of whether you have to or not. But I also don't necessarily agree with the state being the one saying that we know what's best for you, so you must wear your helmet. Now, having said that, every helmet bill that I've been a part of working on has always had the private insurance requirement in there.
Right.
Does your bill have the private insurance requirement?
Yes.
Okay, so for those who don't really understand the difference there, if you're required to have private insurance, it means that if you're wearing your helmet and you were involved in an accident, that you would be responsible for the damages associated with any health injuries relating to you not wearing your helmet versus, say, if you were on state-subsidized health care, then that would be a burden of the state, and that decision then could be impacted by the state's decision. So to Absolutely. Clarify the difference there, I think it's important to have that private health insurance requirement, and so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I just wanted to encourage everyone, whether you have to or not, always wear your helmet because it is a smart thing to do, and it doesn't hurt the ride any, and so wear your helmet.
Right, and you know, and a lot of folks, and I used to in my younger years rode motorcycles, not big Harleys like you do, but I always wore a helmet because I guess I was, it was required, and number two, I felt more comfortable doing it. However, there's research that shows that, you know, above a certain miles per hour, it probably is not very effective. And then I see these kids running around on these mopeds that are, running faster than they should be. and they're not required to wear helmets. And it probably would be a good thing for them, but it doesn't make sense to me that someone that has ridden a motorcycle for many, many years, and you know the guys I'm talking about, they're just comfortable riding without a helmet. I think it should be a choice.
I just believe in individual responsibility,
yep.
Individual sovereignty, and I don't think that the state, I don't think that our design on a consent to be governed was determining on rather an authority was going to tell us rather we had to take safety precautions for our own well-being. And that's why I still think it's smart to do, and I encourage everybody to do it, but I'm not sure that we should have a law against it. So thank you very much. Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion, Senator the First, what reason do you rise? Senator the Fifth, what reason do you rise?
Require the handler of the bill.
Senator Phelps, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Okay, Senator, I was in the office and I heard the that the bill was coming up about motorcycles, and I don't know if you know, we have been discussing this issue now ever since I've been here, and that's been approximately 10 years.
Right.
All right. So why hasn't the bill gotten to the governor's desk in over 10 years?
Yeah, I think part of it in the past, we did not have the individual, the insurance coverage in the bill. When I first handled the bill a number of years ago, about 10 years ago, and this bill was an issue before you and I were ever involved in state politics. We found a way to make that a requirement if you ride without a helmet. And so I think that took some angst out of it. As we go along, I think people become more open to the ideas. More and more states allow ridership without helmets. And, there are some bike rallies, both motor trikes and motorbikes that occur in Missouri presently, but they would be much larger, and I think we'd have more people spending money in the state if the helmet wasn't a requirement as a primary law.
So right now, with this new language that you have proposed, the biker, they would have to have a private insurance in order to
Yes.
ride without their helmets on?
Yes.
So how would you monitor or know if they would have a private or yeah. if not? If, I mean, how would you know that?
A law enforcement officer, stops someone, doesn't have a helmet on, maybe for another reason or whatever, then you're required to be able to produce your insurance card and your proof of insurance right there.
Is that in this bill?
All of that
is in the bill? So you have to, when you get pulled over, you have to provide to the law enforcement officers your private insurance card, like your driver's license?
Yes.
Okay, so let's say you're driving without your helmet and you get pulled over. The police officer realizes that you're not carry or you don't have insurance. What happens then? Well, private then insurance.
Well, there would be a ticket written, I'm sure, in that case, and maybe you even lose your motorcycle license. You know, it depends.
Maybe or will you lose your license? I mean, what do you have in your bill?
I can't say. I do not have that in my bill.
You don't?
It refers to a section of law that addresses some of the issues that drivers or things that we get charged with and tickets written for on the road.
I didn't hear nothing you just said.
Well, it's a good bill, and you should vote for it.
Well, this is a bill that I have opposed for the last 10 years, and the reason that I've been in opposition of this particular bill was simply because of the burden I felt it would have on the state when individuals drive without insurance. You talk all the time about the amount of monies that we are spending when it comes to health care,
right?
Right. That's one of your biggest gripes, that we spend way too much money for health care for the most vulnerable and those that cannot afford it, right? And so My concern is that that allowing those individuals to drive without a helmet would only increase the amount of health care costs to the state. Because I can assure you, a lot of them probably won't have insurance. And if you're driving from out of state, if you're driving from out of state, then I guess they would have to go back to their hometown and get the health care that they need, right?
Right.
But they would probably be seen here if they had an accident.
What now? Say that again.
If a person was driving out from out of state, had an accident here in our state, without private insurance, who would have to pay for that?
It would, and as far as health care?
If they don't have private insurance.
Well, though, anybody that rides in the state of Missouri without a helmet has to have it.
But let's say that's what you're saying here. But what if they don't? Just because we have a lot of people that you have to have driver's license, but a lot of people drive without driver's license.
You know, I don't find that most motorcycle riders, they already have insurance. You know, this wasn't a big problem for them when I added this into the bill because they already have health insurance. They're already covered. You know, there's a lot of people that ride motorcycles that are pretty affluent in society, and it's something that they choose to do. And, you know, they're buying $35,000 to $50,000 Harley Davis.
I know individuals that are affluent in society. They don't even go to the dentist.
You don't what?
Okay, so they don't even go to the dentist sometimes. But you know that's what you're supposed to do annually.
Right.
So it's not like because they are affluent, they understand that they should have health insurance.
Well, the
okay, because
says,
some of them may feel like that they can pay for themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, the bill says that they have to ride without a helmet. If they don't have, they're going to have to ride with a helmet. And, how much good does a helmet do in preventing head injuries? Depends on whom you talk to.
Yeah, I really appreciate you trying to get to a resolution with this particular piece of legislation, being that we have been trying to pass it for the last 10 years since I've been here. But I don't see how we get out of not having to pay for those who may not have health care. And that's the problem that I've had time and time again. And I like the fact that you're saying you have to have private insurance.
Right.
But individuals have to have driver's license. That's law. But they don't always have driver's license.
Well, and with your line of thinking and reasoning, what you're telling me is then why are we letting people drive cars that don't have private health insurance?
Say that again?
I said, with your line of reasoning and thinking, why would we let someone drive a car that didn't have private health insurance?
That doesn't have health insurance?
Yeah.
Well, that's not my argument. I mean, maybe you should talk about that. Maybe you should think about doing something about it.
My
argument is that
I think that's my place to limit them. However, we have put a limit in this bill on what people riding motorcycles can do. So we've gone way past what we do with people driving cars. There's a lot of people who drive cars that are on Medicaid and Medicare.
Right, and that's why probably the cost is up. That's probably why your cost, the cost that you're talking about, the cost that you complain about all the time, that's probably one reason why the cost is so high. Because you have people driving, getting into car accidents that doesn't have health insurance. And we have to pay for it. So we don't want to add another burden, okay, to the health care costs to the state of Missouri. And that's, that's always been my concern.
And we have taken that away.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Further discussion, Senator from Callaway, what region? Senator from the 5th, you're still on the floor, okay. Senator from the 5th. Senator from the 5th.
Yes, I would like to inquire the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator Buchanan, yield. Proceed.
Morning, Senator, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How long have you been here?
How long have
you been in the Capitol?
Oh, this is my 16th year.
So was this bill around 16 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And what was the concerns back then, and why wasn't it able to pass from the House to the Senate to the governor's desk?
Well,
hold on. How many governors have we gone through since then?
Well, let's see. I came in under Holden.
Okay.
And then, remember, we couldn't keep Holden on. And then we then we had Governor Blunt, and then we had Governor Nixon, and now, you know.
Yeah, four. And we're still talking about this same piece of legislation. Apparently something is wrong with it. Apparently something is wrong with this legislation that it hasn't been able to get past the finish line. But go ahead.
Well, the thing is my opinion has changed over time. And at first, you know, I was absolutely opposed to it. Then, under President Obama, they put in the health insurance mandate and they got rid of the lifetime maximum. But then, the thing that reverted me back was when our own Republican Party repealed the mandate. Now, you know, I'm in favor of repealing the mandate. I mean, that, I thought that was okay, but that forces me to flip my position back on this legislation.
Right, now, because now you don't have to, you're not mandated to go get insurance.
Hey, you want me to explain why? Okay, well, you can hear people arguing this point, but if you're riding a motorcycle and you have an accident, you're way more likely to end up seriously injured. I mean, than if you were driving a car.
Oh, absolutely.
You agree? I mean,
absolutely.
Like, you have an accident, you're way more likely to be injured. And in fact, you are way more likely to have serious and expensive injuries.
Oh, absolutely.
And the NHTSA, I guess, had estimated that getting rid of the helmet law would cost, I think, the state something like $80 million.
Now, where did you get that from?
Well, that was years ago. That was from NHTSA, the National Health and Transportation Safety Administration, or whatever. Okay, so the deal is that years ago, I figured, you know, where does one person's liberty end and another's begin? You know, where does one person's liberty begin and another's end? Well, it's great to talk about liberty and, oh, I want to have the liberty of riding my motorcycle without a helmet.
Sure.
And I'm saying that'd be great.
Not at the expense of you, though.
As long as that doesn't take away some of my personal
liberty. That's right.
Liberty.
That's right.
Now, my liberty is my tax dollars.
That's right.
Like, because if I have money, I can go buy a cup of coffee, but if I don't have the money, I can't go buy that cup of coffee. It's liberty. Money is pure liberty. So if you jack up my taxes in order to pay for the guy next to me who's able to now drive his motorcycle without a helmet, he can still drive his motorcycle now. It's just that little slice of liberty is going to cost me some more money. Or it may be that I pay the same amount of taxes, but my taxes don't go to something that I prefer, like, say, my local school district or, you know, something like that. So I see this as a liberty issue. And so I offered up amendments over in the House to say, okay, if you crash your motorcycle, I think that the senator wants to introduce some people. So let's just hold for a second.
Three senators on the floor. Senator 13th, what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Mr. President, first I apologize to the senators for interrupting their debate, but we have some young people here from my district, from St. Rose Philippine Duchesne, and the four folks approaching me right now to wrestle this paper out of my hand are our pages. We have two eighth graders. Take that up there to those ladies. Lauren Cunningham, Nathan Wojciechowski, and Brennan Carpenter and Jakea Caven from St. Rose. Two of them are seventh graders and two of them are eighth graders. can take go on back to the bench. And up in the gallery, scattered around amongst the college students, soaking in all the knowledge from the college students, are the 7th and 8th grade class from St. Rose, Philippine to Shane. They are accompanied by their teachers, Jamie Grun, Mary Pat Scobie, and Christina Wojciechowski, and I ask that they stand and be recognized.
Will the guests of the Senate 13th please rise and be recognized and make the Missouri Senate, let's have the Missouri Senate make them feel welcome today. Senators, proceed with your debate.
And Senator, I was just thinking, and I know that's not appropriate, and I wouldn't do that, but if we did a poll right here with the upper gallery by having them raise their hands, if they would allow for individuals to ride without a helmet, I bet you we would win that poll.
I don't know.
I know for a fact.
Well, the thing
but
is...
I'm not going to ask them to do that because I don't think that's appropriate.
So I have to look at this issue, Senator, as a liberty analysis. And, you know, I want people to be able to have the maximum amount of liberty, but at the same time, I want them to take the maximum amount of responsibility for that liberty and not put the cost of that liberty onto their fellow citizen next door.
Right.
And so that's what the helmet law repeal does, is it puts that on. Now, during the time when we had the individual mandate, and you actually had to have insurance. So you had to have insurance.
That's right.
And there was no lifetime maximum. Well, then, theoretically, when you paid for your own insurance, the rates would be calculated such that it would cover the cost of people who, didn't wear their helmet. And it wouldn't be your next door neighbor's tax dollars. The person buying that insurance would pay. Now, an argument could be made that your next door neighbor who didn't ride a motorcycle would have to pay more, but theoretically, there would be a rider on your policy and your health insurance that would say, you know, you're covered for that.
So listen, I think that we can find a solution here, though. I think that if we can find a way to do a stiff sanction on those who decide they want to break the law by not having insurance, that we take their license to drive the first time for up to like two to three years.
Well, you know, my suggestion was make the law such that if you drove your motorcycle and didn't have a helmet, that you could never, ever be on Medicaid. Well, that amendment went down a horrible loss. I mean, I offered that in the House more than one occasion, and it was just soundly, soundly defeated.
So all of your amendments get defeaded soundly, badly.
Yeah, this bill would pass out of the House and come over the Senate, where it would die, which is probably what's going to happen today. But
what's going to die today?
The thing is...
Your amendment?
No, this bill.
Well, I'm not here to kill the bill.
Oh, well...
I'm not here to kill the bill. I'm going to vote against the bill.
Okay,
but I'm not here to kill the bill.
Well, maybe you're...
Another senator says she's here to kill the bill.
So anyway, the thing is during that period of time when there was... You know, the requirement that you have health insurance and no lifetime maximum, you could be assured that if the person did have insurance, that they were going to be paying for their own, you know, liberty.
That's right.
But now the Congress has repealed the mandate. You know that there is no more an insurance mandate. So now we have this bill, which is designed to make that better somehow by saying that you have to have $1 million of liability coverage or, you know, of medical coverage. Well, I'm sorry, but $1 million doesn't go very far. That doesn't cover you for your whole life. Now, all of a sudden, even with this, you know, I like $1 million, but maybe it should be like $50 million.
Yeah, but let's talk about that. Let's talk about the FTEs it may cost for individuals to start, you know, looking to see if individuals, I mean, how do you register that? I mean, how does it, all of it works? You know, like you have to go into the Department of Revenue to get your license, you know. I mean, how would this be implemented?
Well, I suppose that you would have to have the insurance card when you go to get your license for your motorcycle. And then,
about the law enforcement?
Now, you know, if somebody pulls you over, you have to show proof of insurance. Well, it's a simple matter of showing proof of insurance that the card says on it that.
But that's not medical insurance. Like, how do you connect medical with?
The liability insurance actually has medical coverage. Like, you have medical on your car insurance, more than likely. I mean, it's part of the coverage.
Well, yeah, I have full coverage, though. Yeah, but go ahead.
Well, that includes medical, and it would say on the card that you have it. So the thing is, it makes perfect sense that if you show your insurance card when you get pulled over by the police, that, you know, they would be able to know whether you had current insurance. But the thing is that the $1 million is inadequate. Because now, if you have a head injury, which is the most likely thing that occurs that would cause massive amounts of medical costs, it could easily exceed $1 million. I mean, $1 million is nothing when you're talking about taking care of somebody on a ventilator with lifetime health care. I mean, they're going to end up on Medicaid at a high cost. You know, many, many thousands of dollars a year. Now, all of a sudden, we're back to putting the burden of your exercising your increased liberty onto your fellow citizens. Now, all of a sudden, my analysis has shifted because of the elimination of the requirement that you have insurance. So,
okay, Senator, listen, I'm not here to help filibuster this bill, okay? So I'll talk to you later, Senator.
All right.
Mr. President.
Senator Fifth.
Yes, I would like to inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator 24th, yield. Proceed.
Senator, how are you this morning?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I was just wanting to talk to you about today.
Yes. So I'm so glad that you inquired of me. Thank you. And I was going to ask you if we could talk throughout the day. Today is the anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So.
Excuse me, Mr. President. Can we get some order in the chamber? Thank you.
Senator the Fifth.
Mr. President, can we get order in the chambers? It's a little loud around here.
Will the Senate come to order? Let's let the Senate senators engage in a debate. Proceed.
Thank you.
Well, Senator, thank you for inquiring of me. I wanted to talk to you today about the anniversary of the death of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So as you know, every day I've been getting up and talking about people who have died as a result of gun violence. And, you know, there's no lack of stories about that. But today, I think we need to set aside for one of the great leaders of our time.
That's
and
right.
The work that he's done continues on because it is not done.
That's right.
And I know
and
that
you know he
that.
Was assassinated.
Yes.
You know, gun violence.
Right.
Okay. And at that time, he was in Memphis.
Right.
Right. And there was a strike going on, you know, for sanitary workers.
That's right.
It was unfortunate because they were not, you know, being treated in a manner in which they should have been treated with pay and how
safety
issues
terrible.
And things of that sort.
Right.
And so, you know, Martin Luther King was more than just, I have a dream.
Oh,
okay?
Absolutely.
I mean, people want to latch on to this one little speech about Martin Luther King having a dream. But he fought extremely hard for economic stability.
Right, and justice. Well,
and justice, you know, economic justice. I mean, that was like the next fight.
And it continues today.
Yeah.
And I actually printed out, you know, he said so many things that were profound then and are still today that I think we need to remember. And that's the reason I was going to actually get up and inquire of you maybe many times today, because I think that each of these things, that these brief statements or phrases that I'm going to read to you one at a time, are really meaningful, and they need to sit with us, and we need think about how they impact us today. And you know what? The one I'll start with is, the time is always right to do what is right.
That's right.
And not only does this apply to us here in the legislature, but particularly to us, and also to everyone listening today, to everyone sitting here, to all of us, I think we have to remember that.
Yeah.
That this is the time.
Yeah. I think we all should, everybody in the chamber, again, because, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a legend in his own right. And he fought against injustices all throughout this country and the world.
Right.
Opportunity for young black boys and young black girls. Young white boys and young white girls.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
and so I think that it would be befitting for the chamber, if my colleagues are listening, it would be befitting for my colleagues to do what you're doing today. Jason had to say this, you know, Jason had to let me know that he was a huge COGIC conference call. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about. So it would be befitting for the colleagues here, my colleagues, to Google one of his profound statements and get up on the floor. Yeah, Church of God in Christ, to get up on the floor and just you recite one of his great moments in history, just like you just did. I mean,
right.
One quote. So if you all were listening, my colleagues, Democrats and Republicans, I would like for you to just throughout the day, just inquire of me. And just give me one of Martin Luther King's famous quotes. And they're not too long.
Now
I don't ask a lot of my colleagues. That's
right.
All I want.
Today, the time is always right to do what is right. You're asking us to participate with you. And I think that's greatly appreciated to this great civil rights leader and this person who cared so deeply about the rights of all people. So I appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you. If anybody is at a loss for statements, I have many on my desk, because there was so much that was said then that is certainly applicable to our world today.
Right. I totally agree.
All right.
So
thank you.
So again, if my colleagues are listening, Senator, I would like for you to inquire of me and just give one quote from Martin Luther King Jr. And you can Google those. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any senator's desire to be heard on the bill? Senator of the 14th, a reason to your rise.
Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the senator from the 5th.
Senator from 5th, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Well, I don't have to Google this quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, because I have memorized it for several years now, and I have never forgotten it. And he said, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. And that's something that I remember often in the situations that I get into, either in my personal or my professional life. So I want you to remember that. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. And that's a quote from Martin Luther King.
Thank you, Senator. I like that.
Senators, desire to be heard on the bill. Senator from Callaway, what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Send the amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
Yes, it has been distributed, and I would request a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Please move for the adoption of the amendment and proceed with your explanation.
I move for the adoption of the amendment, Mr. President, and this amendment is from Senate Bill 766, which would allow motorcycles to use the shoulder of the road on interstates or limited access highways only when the traffic becomes severely congested or slows or stops. This is designed to be a safety measure to get motorcycles out of traffic when it becomes tight and easy for accidents to happen that would knock a bike over, cause overheating, or potentially squishing a rider if a bad accident occurred in tight quarters. The idea of using the shoulder in lieu of lane splitting, which does occur in California, we don't want to do that here in Missouri. What we want to do is see no lane splitting, but let them get out of the high traffic areas and get on the shoulder so they're not hit. The bill limits the situation when using the shoulder. It can occur in times when the traffic slows below 30 miles an hour. Motorcycles can then operate on the shoulder at no more than 10 miles faster than the flow of traffic, or 35 miles, whichever one is less. And in addition to that, I believe I'm ready to answer questions.
Same senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 1. Senator from Phelps, will raise your eyes.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this is a good common sense bill, and urge the body to vote yes.
On the amendment.
On the amendment. I'm sorry.
Further, does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from 24th, will raise your eyes.
President, to inquire of the senator from the 9th.
Senator from the 9th. Sergeant Arms, would you summon? Oh, there she is. Okay. Senator from the 9th, you yield?
Yes, I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Did you get a chance to hear the amendment to the bill that basically motorcycles, I guess, can go around on the shoulder when there's a lot of traffic?
Right, I did. Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that?
You know, we heard it in committee. I have mixed emotions about it. I do understand what the senator is trying to accomplish. But I do have a few concerns about it. I think I understand the motive, really, to keep more motorcycle passengers or drivers safe in traffic, because it is dangerous on highways when there's very heavy traffic. Even, say, along 70, when you have traffic that's moving and then you have a motorcycle between cars, sometimes they're moving very slow, sometimes they're moving a little faster. But I think we have to be careful if there happens to be maybe debris on the shoulders of those roads. We also have to be a bit careful about what that means for law enforcement and safety. So,
right, it actually concerns me quite a bit. It's, you know, and I'm thinking about Highway 6440 in the St. Louis area, where there are sound walls up, and there is, with the road expansion, there is such, I feel nervous sometimes driving down that highway because there is virtually no shoulder. No. I don't know what that means then. Is the motorcycle going to be allowed to go past the car, still on the white line on the outside of the lane? I'm not sure why we would allow motorcycles to...
Senator from Phelps, you need to take off your microphone. Proceed.
That doggone senator from Phelps.
You know, we've never, I don't remember ever having a three-way conversation, but that would be kind of interesting.
I know. So, typically the microphones are turned off.
Yeah, so my concern is about, there are all kinds of situations I think that this doesn't consider. So, for example, that very narrow area and when it's okay for a motorcycle to do that and when it's not. Also, if traffic is slowed, and you're not anticipating somebody, you're in the right-hand lane and not anticipating somebody driving by, I forget how many, 10 miles faster than the flow of traffic on your right. Heaven help us if, and I know you shouldn't open the door of your car when you're driving, but if somebody's at a stop and the door of their car gets open, to me, there are just all kinds of considerations about why this might not be safe, and I'm not sure why we are extending motorcycle drivers that additional courtesy or whatever you would call it to sort of skirt around traffic. So,
here's what I will say. I will say, as a driver on the highway when there's heavy traffic, it does make me very nervous when there happens to be motorcycle riders within the traffic, or if they happen to be directly in front of my car, because things are stop and go.
Right.
And you do tend to need to leave them a little more space, because I have that fear of the fact that they're only on a motorcycle, and depending on how traffic picks up or slows down, what that means for the motorcycle rider or some of the other, or even some of the other drivers, you know, that happen to be dealing with some of the motorcycles going, switching lane to lane, even sometimes
right.
too. And
right.
So I understand what she's trying to accomplish. And I think, and I'm trying to remember some of the other things that we talked about in committee, because, of course, this is the venue where when we have good ideas for legislation, that all of us kind of bounce around ideas and then weigh those as we talk about new options or things that we need to consider legislatively. But I think one of the concerns, too, happened to have been when the motorcycle riders then had to pass, if they were to come off the shoulder, going across maybe and exit off the highway. So I think, you know, some of those things need to be worked out.
Senators, if I could beg your indulgence, I have the Her Majesty's Consul General from the UK here. If you'd give me a second, I'd like to introduce this gentleman to the body and have you make him feel welcome. Today we have Mr. John Saville, the Consul General from Chicago, Her Majesty's General Counsel. He is a career diplomat who joined the Foreign and Commonwealth Office in 1981 after graduating with in honors in geography from Oxford University. His career has spanned the Americas, three postings, plus Europe and Asia, two postings in each. While his overseas roles have been mainly political in focus, they have included increasing elements of prosperity, commercial, and counselor work, that the jobs have been more senior, as his jobs become more senior. He has kept a strong interest in the environment since university and also follows human rights issues seriously and closely. Would the Senate make the Consul General of the UK from Chicago welcome in the Missouri Senate? Thank you, Senators. Proceed with your debate.
President, so, you know, the other situation that has come to my mind is if there's an emergency vehicle that needs to move through traffic, and there is somebody, you know, the cars in the are supposed to pull over to the right, and especially if they're in a situation on the highway where they're stopped and an emergency vehicle is trying to get through. I just think we're setting up situations where this tri-motorcycle and the motorcycle could be putting themselves in harm's way when we allow this, or could be putting somebody else in harm's way. So right. I'm a little concerned about that, but actually, frankly, more concerned about the underlying bill.
That's exactly what I was going to say next. I think I'm even more concerned about the underlying bill. And, you know, here's what I will say, that one of the most atrocious, frightening accidents that I have ever seen in my life happened when I was a very young girl, and my parents, my mom and dad, were in the car driving, and it was my sister and I was probably, I may have been 6 or 7 years old. And I will tell you that I was in the back seat of the car, and at the time I was too young to even know streets in our city. Today, I very well know, because every time I pass by that spot since I was a kid, I think about that accident that I had seen, and it was at 47th and Prospect in Kansas City. And I was, for some reason, daydreaming or staring at the intersection, and there was a car that was proceeding through the intersection, and there was a motorcycle that was turning. And I remember very vividly today, I was already staring at the intersection, and it still plays in my mind, slow motion, when I think about it. Because I was staring, and then I see this car proceeding through the intersection, and I see this motorcycle that's turning. He did not have a helmet on. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to hit that motorcycle. And there was a crash between the car and the motorcycle. And I can still see the gentleman that was on the motorcycle flying into the air and him landing on his head. And it was one of the most frightening things that I have ever seen as a kid. And it has really stuck with me. I will tell you that at that point, that a lot of folks that were sitting at the stoplight, as was my family, my dad, jump out of the car and they're all running toward the intersection to see about this, the guy that was on the motorcycle.
Right.
And there's this pool of red that begins collecting around his head, and a pool of red by the time the emergency vehicles and the ambulance had come, it had begun running into the street. And when I think about that now, how that has impacted me as a very young kid,
right,
still remembering that at my age, remembering it scene by scene, what do you call it when you see a movie? What do they call it, the little takes? It replays in my mind very vividly and very slowly, in slow motion, that it still frightens me.
Right.
And I am very frightened, I am, about drivers of motorcycles not wearing helmets. You know, and I just had a conversation, I was having conversations with the senator from Phelps, and I understand some of the other side of the issue, that sometimes that there are folks that have helmets on, and I think what he said was the helmets after a certain mile per hour are not as effective as they are at low speeds. And I'm not certain as to the, I mean, I would, granted, that might be true.
Right.
But here's what I'll say, that in addition to that, Senator Yvonne Wilson, who served as the 9th district senator prior to myself, our families have known each other for years. I have known her family and her kids forever. And I remember when she was in the legislature, her son Jay, who was a little older than me, rode a motorcycle.
Senator from Barry, if you're going to need to kneel down at the desk, if you're going to visit with the senator from Phelps, kneel. There you go. Proceed, Senator.
Right. Jay, they were at a family event at a relative's house, and literally the other relative's house was just around the corner, maybe 4 or 5 houses down. And Jay, because it was not a long distance, did not have on his helmet. He was not going at a high rate of speed.
Right, just.
And his bike slid, I believe, on like gravel or sand right there at the corner, and he fell off and hit his head, and he died. And it was such a tragic thing for all of us that knew Miss Wilson's kids. We knew Jay.
Right.
And so to think that it happened to have happened at an event where there was family, where you really take for granted even going such a very short distance, not even a block away, without a helmet, and he slid on some gravel.
Right.
And he died. And Jay was young. I mean, he wasn't like 17 or 18. I think he may have been in 20s or somewhere. I'm trying to remember now how old he was when he passed. But it was such a tragic event for
right.
all of us that happened to have known him, that knew the Wilsons, that grew up with their family.
Right.
And so there are a few instances in my life where,
I
for me, it's something more than I could ever agree to, because I believe, yes, that helmets save lives. Now,
absolutely.
I had another conversation with the senator from Phelps, sometime as to the... there's a question as to the quality of life that that person may have if they have on a helmet and they so live through an event. But I am frightened about the possibility, really, of folks riding through Missouri on motorcycles without helmets. And it's because I've had a few events in my life that have given me a very traumatic fear of that specifically. But I will tell you, the event when I happened to be a very young kid is one that has taken, that has emotionally affected me, because it was my own real life horror stories relative
right.
to motorcycles and helmets.
Right.
And it's something that really has carried with me, that I've carried with me all of these years. And so I do have more concerns about the underlying bill, even, you know, more than I have about the amendment.
Right.
I believe some of the things with the amendment can probably be worked out. This to me is something that I would, that I see as the potential for being very tragic for many folks that would then decide to ride without a helmet.
Well, I think the story of the former senator's son is a perfect example of, you know, we don't know that he would have survived had he had a helmet on, but...
Well, I would think that the likelihood, he was going very slow, so yeah, it wasn't even a fast motorcycle ride, and
but
that is something that we wouldn't have thought that he wouldn't have died
from. Right. We know that helmets protect people's heads, and we know that helmets help keep people alive in those kinds of situations. And the people that study and work with brain injury, you know, they are saying this is really important. Let's make sure we do this. In the community where I live, in St. Louis, I want to say my kids were little. So, you know, 2 decades ago, I want to say back in like 96 or 97, we passed a helmet law for cyclists, for bicyclists. So because we know that even riding your bike, which you're not going to get up to a highway speed or to 30 miles an hour or 25 unless you're really good. But we know that when people fall, they really do significant damage. And if you can help insulate people from that damage, then you're doing the right thing in terms of nobody wants to feel responsible for someone's death or even more severe injury because they were out there without a helmet on. And I think the senator from Buchanan made the case for why this is also an economic issue. You know, this legislation says you have to have insurance valued at up to $1 million. You hit your head because you're traveling on a motorcycle and have injuries from that, even with a helmet on, but particularly without one.
Right.
If you survive that and have to, and you have some kind of brain damage and have to have some kind of help and treatment the rest of your life, you're going to go through that $1 million really quickly. If you have to be put on a ventilator, that $1 million, it may sound like a lot of money to people like you and me, but it is not a lot of money when it comes to hospital bills for traumatic brain treatment or traumatic injuries. It's going to go fast, and then what happens? It's not as if these people don't need continued treatment, maybe in-home health care to help them, maybe nursing home care to help them stay alive and survive the impact of that accident with no helmet. And that's going to cost, even if they're not Medicaid people, they're going to end up being Medicaid people because that insurance, that $1 million is going to run out and it's going to cost somebody. And if they don't have the money to take care of it, it costs the state. So when the senator from Buchanan talks about his loss of freedom, I mean, he's weighed the two, the freedom to sort of let your hair blow in the wind when you're riding on your motorcycle versus, I don't know if he cared so much about his hair blowing in the wind, but versus having to spend taxpayer dollars to help a person through a traumatic injury that they received as a result of a fall without a helmet. You know, I can think of no compelling reason to think it's all right to let people get on these three-wheel or two-wheel motorized vehicles and to do so without the safety and the protective gear of a helmet. It makes no sense to me.
I get it, and I understand the argument on the other side that folks should have freedom to do, in those cases, what they would like to do, and I get that, but I feel
but this
as
is
if,
one of those freedoms that can affect all of us.
Well, and it's interesting because in this body, sometimes I feel as if we have folks, or we make decisions in here as a full body where we want to save certain people from themselves.
Right.
All right. And it's a very interesting dynamic, of course, as you know here. Some of the decisions that we make for folks that don't necessarily affect some of us individually, but this happens to be one of those issues where I feel as if the argument has to be made on the other side for the importance of helmets and bike riding and, you know.
Right. So... And yes, you know, I'm fortunate because since my children were little and that law went into effect in my community about bicycles, they've always worn helmets. And, you know, they go skiing. They understand the importance because I think they've seen the effects of what can happen when somebody is in an accident without a helmet. And I'm talking bicycles. And bicycles are not traveling as quickly as these motorized vehicles that we're talking about.
But clearly we can say the same thing about seatbelts. I mean, it's the same thing. Seatbelts save lives, so do helmets.
They do.
And in as much as folks want to be able to ride without helmets, I'm certain, you know, there are folks that want to be able to ride without seatbelts as well.
Right.
And I don't know that that argument is still being made on the other side relative to seatbelt wearers as the argument, you know, or the analogies being made with helmets on this helmet law.
Right. So I wanted to ask you about something that you stated in your conversation with another senator about the idea that people surviving those accidents where their head is hit or something severe happens to them. Was the implication that it's going to be such a terrible life after survival that it's better just to...
Well, I have to accept that some folks feel that way. And I recognize that in conversations that, you know, that some of us may have had with family members, certain folks will say that if I have to live a life like this, I would rather not have lived. And I think that's a very real assessment for some folks of what their desire is, you know, depending on what happens in their lives. But there are some folks that, you know, as has been said, that feel as if, you know, they had a helmet on and the helmet cracked, and that folk, that person then had an awful head injury, and, you know, they are sustained with life support or other things, or, you know, I'm not certain of the details. But I can see that folks would probably say that. I know that, you know, my mom has said in the past, if, you know, if this happens to me and I have to live that way, just pull the plug. And so I think it's the same analogy, and I get that. But for the most part, I think we have to consider how often that happens as opposed to how often the seatbelt actually saves a very vibrant life.
Right.
For those to be considered. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that idea that...
I'm sure there are cases like that.
Right. And... yeah, I feel like that. What concerns me about that attitude is it doesn't sound really like pro-life to me. But I think I've probably said the same thing.
Right.
The same thing to my kids and this and this happens, but I actually don't know. So you know,
well, that's an interesting analogy too, as we talk about, you know.
I mean, I think helmets save lives. I think that they're. You know, maybe can be considered a pro-life safety measure. And, you know, interestingly, you talk about a helmet cracking or somebody having a really severe brain injury, a concussion. So, you know, concussions, we learn more and more. As time goes on, we've learned more and more about concussions. When my son played lacrosse in college, he had a, they wear helmets. He had a concussion. He was out for a couple of minutes, and... what they told him even then, which was not that long ago, he's only 29, but you know, he had to refrain from all kinds of activities for several weeks. I can't remember exactly how many, but from his mother's perspective, it wasn't long enough, because I was really concerned because of the long-term ramifications of concussion. But we tend to learn more and more each year, and even now, since he's graduated from college and moved on, protocol has changed, and people know more and more about how the brain heals and brain injuries and getting back to doing things so too quickly. So even if a helmet has protected you, you probably still have a concussion, but we know more about how to deal with it than we used to.
Right.
So if you've survived the accident and you have a brain injury, you know, there are people working in research all the time coming up with better protocol for how to get a person back to being his or her normal functioning self. So, you know, as those medical, as we learn medically what to do, how to protect people, I think we're also learning that these helmets will protect you from dying. You may have injuries, but now we're learning how to deal better with those injuries to help you for the long haul. So I just think that this is one of those ideas, just like seatbelt laws, and we do have a seatbelt law in Missouri. You may recall that I had talked about my primary seatbelt law on the floor or you may not,
right.
A couple weeks ago or whenever that was in relation right. to spring
break. Which some of us have concerns with, you know, for other
right.
reasons.
Right, and I for other yeah. reasons. And that's why I said, you know, yeah, I understand the concern about racial profiling, and it's certainly not my intention to do that. But the law in Missouri does say you are required to wear your seatbelt. So if you are called over, pulled over and you don't have your seatbelt on, you can get a ticket for not having your seatbelt on. But in most places around the state, you can't be pulled over for that purpose.
Right.
Which I'm going to take a minute and talk about my dad, who was not only a motorcycle rider up till in his 80s, he's 91 right now. We've taken away both the keys to the car and the motorcycle because we don't want him to hurt himself or anyone else.
Right.
But he always wore a helmet. He was always safe. I think the only time I recall him not wearing a helmet was when I was about 3 or 4, and he had a big motor scooter, a huge motor scooter that he has donated to the Museum of Transport.
Oh, wow.
And he would put 4 or 5 of us on it with him. That's how many people could fit on
wow.
this motor scooter. And
that's
we would drive,
scooter.
We would ride around the neighborhood very slowly because there were 4 or 5 little kids on there with him. And we would go to the park that was attached to our school. And I just remember very specifically one time that I'll share with you just because it's a fun story. So he was riding up to get to the track and got us all stuck in the mud. So all these little kids had to pile off the motorcycle. I don't even know how he ever got us out of the mud because I know none of us were going to be any help.
Yeah.
But he did get out of the mud and we all got safely home. That's the only time I remember us not wearing a helmet on his
but
motorcycle.
Isn't it amazing what we did when we were young before the laws changed?
Well, and my dad is one of those people who grew up not wearing a seatbelt.
Right.
And so he was in a main part of our community. And my community that has the helmet law also has a primary seatbelt law. So you can get a ticket for, you can be pulled over in Creve Coeur for not wearing your seatbelt. So beware.
Right.
You don't have to have a helmet on in the car, but you do on your motorcycle, your bicycle, and you have to have your seatbelt on because the community makes safety a real priority. So my dad is sitting at an intersection that goes from a side street onto Major Olive Street Road. And he's going to turn right, and right there with his helmet on is a police officer on his motorcycle. And my dad said what's going through his head is, do I put my seatbelt on now and let him see that I wasn't wearing it, or do I just sort of go forward and hope he didn't notice? So my dad decided he's going to go forward and hope the officer doesn't notice. He turns the corner and he gets pulled over by the officer on a motorcycle, and he says, sir, you're not wearing your seatbelt. In our community, you have to wear your seatbelt. And my dad said, well, And I know the police really well. I used to serve on the city council there. And my dad said, do you know my daughter? And the police officer, yes, says, yes, I know her. And here's your ticket. So I said to my dad, never use my name in that way again to try to get out of a ticket.
I get that.
But
I've had to tell that to relatives.
It was a good learning experience for my dad. Since that time, he always wears his seatbelt. And even though he's not driving, when he gets in my car or any of our cars, first thing he does is attach his seatbelt. So I'm proud of him that he learned from
right.
his mistake and grateful that nothing happened.
Right.
He was never in an accident.
Well, his action, of course, was at least a very simple event for him. You know, this issue of primary seatbelts really is a very significant issue for folks in my community. And, I mean, it's a conversation we can have further, of course, offline.
Sure.
But I do have grave concerns about it as well. And for a number of different reasons, and we've talked about it for years here in the Capitol. I've been here 12 years. And when it comes up, it's the same discussion that we have had before about our concerns relative to the primary seatbelt. Do I believe that everyone should wear seatbelts? Absolutely. Do
right.
I always wear my seatbelt? Absolutely. You know, before we had the mandate that we would wear seatbelts, my mom's brother was killed in an auto accident when he was 23 years old, and I was about, I think, 3 years old, maybe 2 or 3 years old. So even before we were required by law to wear seatbelts, my mom has always made us wear seatbelts as kids. Always.
Yeah, that's so smart.
Always.
I mean, I remember being a little kid and standing up in the front seat of the car when I was, you know, very young.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we did such crazy things. We're lucky we're all here.
And when parents, of course, you know, when they had the armrest,
yeah,
you know, in the front seat, and we would frequently see, you know, dads, you know, holding babies right there, riding them shotgun, as we would call it. or, you know, campaigning as kids, and we were, you know, it'd be 10 of us piled in the back of a pickup truck, and we're all jumping out of the truck campaigning and passing out stuff. And
right.
You think now you would never see 10 kids or 10 young kids riding down the highway through the city.
Right, it's dangerous.
You know, unrestrained in the back of a pickup truck. But, you know, when you think about things you did when you were younger, just like riding the motorcycle, of course, with five young kids with no helmets, times were different then. And so I think
we know more. We know more about how these things impact our lives. And none of us wants to know somebody or see the kind of accident you saw that, you know, maybe
it was tragic. It was tragic.
It was
and it really
tragic.
Affected me as a kid.
It was tragic. And maybe things would have been different had he been wearing a helmet.
Right. So here's what I want to make one more observation. And I have not seen the senator from Dallas today. But you must have gotten the memo as well on the Women Wear Gray Day in the Missouri Senate.
I did not. But I don't remember seeing it. That's really weird. So
the really strange thing is that I have not seen the senator from Dallas this morning, so I'm not sure what color she's wearing. But every other woman in the Missouri Senate has worn gray today.
Who sent that memo?
Which is a very rare occurrence that you know, all of us would then decide to wear this.
For me, it's a happy accident, I have to say. So
I think for all of us as well.
Was it in response to the seersucker outfits that we see?
No, you know what? I'm disappointed. You know, I really participate in the whole seersucker thing.
Yeah,
I have since I've been in the Senate, and I have completely forgotten.
It's too cold.
I think that, you know, I need a reminder. I should have remembered that it was the Wednesday after Easter. But, you know, when we left last week, I didn't, you know, we weren't. Look, I should have been the one, I guess, to remind
folks. I think a couple of senators talked about it. But, yeah, I
had forgotten. So, yeah, this is a Wednesday. I do not have on seersucker, but I will say that all of the women in the Senate, maybe with the exception of one, has worn gray, and I very rarely wear gray.
Why are we wearing gray? What is it to signify?
You know, I don't know. I will tell you that the weather changed significantly, which is probably one of the reasons that I didn't remember that it was seersucker Wednesday this week, because it had gotten so cold.
I think because the skies have been so gray, maybe we are supposed to reflect the great outdoors. But
And, you know, you talked earlier, I'm going to go back to one more thing, too. You talked about today being the anniversary, of course, for the death of Martin Luther King Jr. And I certainly wish that I had had the opportunity to go to Memphis for the day of festivities. You know, they have today at the Lorraine Motel and throughout Memphis. But at 7 o'clock tonight, there will be a ringing of the bells around the country in commemoration of his death. And I was hoping, you know, at 7 p.m. that the Senate would also be able to ring the bells of the Missouri Senate at that time, that there would be a simultaneous ring around the nation.
That would be a great commemoration.
Well, what I did find out was that all of our bells are associated with the command, come to the chamber for session or standing division. And I think there's one or two other commands, but we do not have just a single bell, of course, that the doorman would be able to ring without there being another voice command associated with it. So I get that. I was disappointed in that. I'm like, oh, no. That would have been really cool for the Missouri Senate to have been able to ring a bell at the same time that the other folks would around the country in commemoration.
Well, if we're in session, maybe we can figure something out.
Yeah, or you can ring the bell. Ding, ding, ding.
It's a Well, we could talk about that. But, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. So I don't know if you remember former Representative Rory Ellinger.
I do.
So, and you...
He did. I remember his story. I think he had marched at...
He used to refer to himself as one of Dr. King's bodyguards.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, how does that work? He goes, you know, not a bodyguard like you, an official, but that's what they were. That right. He was one of the people that marched with King and was there to protect him and to stand up for civil rights and
social injustice,
right. Justice issues. And he really lived his life that way.
Right.
And I would tell you one of the stories of his. I have so many stories, but he was my seatmate for quite a while.
I remember you saying that.
Right. And one of the stories, and maybe you already know this, but when he and Linda, who I adore, his wife Linda Locke, when they were married, on her wedding dress, he pinned on a big ERA button on the day of their wedding.
Wow.
So this was a guy who was all about equal rights for.
Yeah.
Women, for people of color, for anyone who,
right.
who suffered from injustice. And
right.
He really did live his life fighting for that. He was an attorney and then ran for public office. And, you know, he and I didn't even always agree on every issue, but
right.
we sure worked well together. And when he got up on the floor, I think people listened and he had a message to deliver. And no one ever doubted that he was anything but genuine in his
right.
desire to leave this earth, to leave our country and our state a better place than
right.
than,
I agree there.
Than how he found it. So
that's great.
And he didn't say this, Dr. King did, but our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
Right.
So some more, you know, profound words
right.
from.
And it's interesting because I think a lot of us can remember a few quotes from Dr. King. I think it was interesting that the senator from the 5th said if we happen to remember those quotes, then we can say them and inquire of her on the floor today. But there are several that I remember. I remember the one about darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that.
That's
and
right.
hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.
Right. So
is one of them. And so
yeah,
we'll say
that is absolutely one of them. And,
right.
you know, I had a list because sometimes when I come to the floor, I forget things. That was top of the list. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think these are words that I'm hopeful that we're all taking them to heart.
Right, of course.
I know that the people in here are serving because they believe that they can do something for the greater good.
Right,
we
of
don't
course.
Always agree on what those things are or how to get there. But we certainly, do you know some people that are walking in?
No, but I'm looking at the senator from Dallas, and I'm trying to determine whether that is a gray jacket she has on today.
I don't think the jacket's gray, but I do see gray in the scarf.
Okay.
So I'm going to give
here,
her...
From here, and I need my glasses on. I'm not sure. It could be a white color with some kind of, you know, pattern. Or there might
so,
be some
grayness
to
it. So, you know, you mix black and
to
white together, you get gray, so...
So we did then give her the memo as well about Women's Gray Day in the Missouri Senate.
I just wish I
what
could.
What a coincidence.
Who sent the memo out? Do you remember?
No, there was no memo. I think it was
oh,
just a coincidence that all of us today
really
decided. No, I was only joking because literally all of us, all of the women in the Senate wore the same color today.
Isn't that
which is
so
a very,
strange.
Very rare occurrence. All of us have on gray today.
Hey, so...
it made me wonder. The senator from Callaway
oh
said,
gosh,
we're not gloomy.
I really,
are we gloomy? And
I really thought that there was something that it was commemorating.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Dallas, what reason your eyes?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm seeking unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
President, it's my honor today to introduce several bankers from around the state. They're here for Target Bankers. And this is on behalf of the senator from the 33rd, the senator from the 30th, senator from the 27th, senator from the 25th and 31st, and myself, the senator from the 28th. And I would just ask that the body please make all these ladies and gentlemen feel welcome.
Will the guests of the senator from Dallas please rise and the Senate make them feel welcome today. Senators, proceed with your debate.
Thank you. So we were talking about, oh my gosh, you really had me on gray day. And I was thinking, why did somebody pick that color? And you
well,
know,
I don't always wear gray, and so it's interesting.
I haven't worn this jacket literally in years.
Uh-huh.
So and almost didn't wear it today because it doesn't fit right anymore, but which I'm not complaining about.
Right. I get it. So, yeah. So... thank you, but I share the same concerns about the underlying bill. And,
right.
You know, and I hope we don't go down this road. It's really, it's for safety. And we're all for,
We're for saving lives.
Right. And, you know, the idea that we're deregulating so many things that are really, thank you, that are really so much about protections and safety is, I'm not sure the advantage it provides to the people of the state and to the, even to the individual. I understand somebody wants to, feel the wind in their hair. I don't know how else to describe it.
Right.
But wearing a helmet is a small price to pay for what may be a life of indebtedness or a life of pain and injury that you may not suffer just because you wore a helmet to transport yourself. So
right.
Well, Senator, I appreciate the inquiry, I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
The senator desire to be heard. Senator from Buchanan, we'll raise your eyes.
Inquire the senator from Callaway.
Senator from Callaway, yield. Proceed.
Yes, Mr. President, I do.
Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry. So your amendment raises some concerns for me, and I'm wondering, do other states do this?
Well, other states, some of them allow lane splitting, which we don't want. I've seen that. But mainly, it's just to give those individuals on a cycle a chance to get out of a bad situation. And they can't go over 35 miles an hour. It's 10 miles over or 35 miles an hour, depending on which is less.
So,
I hate driving behind someone on a motorcycle because it always worries me what's going to happen.
Right, but the answer to the question is this is not done in other states.
You know, I don't know that for sure. I can find that out.
Okay, the thing is it occurs to me there's a couple of downsides to this idea. The first one, which you may or may not agree with, would be that in, say, metropolitan areas where there are a lot of slow-moving lines of traffic, St. Louis and Kansas City probably would be the main ones, that it would be a really big, gigantic advantage to be on a motorcycle because...
Well, I can say Highway 70 has a lot of traffic, and that runs through my district primarily. So even in rural areas, because Highway 70 runs that direction.
Well, recently I had the experience of having to drive from Kansas City and then through to St. Louis pretty much in one day, and most of it was on I-70. And there was a downpour such that, the rain was coming down so heavy that the traffic was moving at 20 miles an hour, and a significant amount of the time between Kansas City and Columbia. And then from Kansas City to St. Louis, there were a lot of times when I would be riding along and having to just stop. And
did you stop right on the highway?
You were just sitting in a parking lot on I-70.
Everybody was stopping.
Okay. And in cases like that, if your law were in effect, you would have all those motorcycles just keep going 10 miles an hour.
Well, if everybody stopped, they can't go over 10 miles an hour.
Right, so they'd be just driving down the
usually
lane. And when I was going,
Senator, what I've seen, usually they look for an overpass to sit under on those torrential rains and just sit.
Yeah, but, theoretically, if I was going 25, then I could have motorcycles going by me in that downpour at 35. But that's not what
that's
I...
That's the what if.
That's the thing that was concerning to me was the idea that in Kansas City and St. Louis, where it's a daily occurrence that traffic is slowed, way slow, daily, twice a day. Rush hour. You usually, if you're on 435 in Kansas City or on I-70 or other, divided highways, you're going to be stopped. And so I would think that if you're a person who lives in that area and are commuting to work every day, this is a big encouragement to ride a motorcycle. I mean, it would be, because you'd be
it
able to...
It wouldn't be for me. I like my car.
Right. But if you're a person who doesn't like sitting in traffic, you're going to want to ride a motorcycle. And so I really don't want to encourage people to ride motorcycles. Now, if I were a Harley-Davidson dealer, I'd be like all over your amendment. But
I don't know a Harley
that's
Davidson
the first thing.
Dealer.
I don't really want to encourage people to ride motorcycles. And then the second thing is that if you're, you know, a lot of the times I'll be riding, driving along, and on the shoulder there will be pieces of truck tire, dead animals, all
see,
sorts
those
of stuff.
On the road as well.
Right.
Lots just, of deer in my
right,
district.
Right, that's true. But it's worse on the shoulder because most of that stuff on the roadbed either gets smushed down or pushed off the side or blows off or whatever. And it seems to me that
well,
if you're riding down
the...
Well,
this doesn't say a cyclist has to take the shoulder. It just says they may to avoid a situation.
Right. But if I'm going 25 and they are going 35, they're more likely to impact that stuff. And I see potential legal liability for the state by not having that stuff cleared off. Like, if we pass this law, now all of a sudden, we have the duty to keep the shoulder clean for the motorcycles that might be using it in times of slow traffic.
And why is that?
Well, because
there's no
if we know, if our highway department knows, we're going to get interrupted here for a special guest. So we might as well go ahead. I mean,
three senators on the floor. Senator from the 23rd. What region of your eyes?
And I am apologize for interrupting the debate from the senators, but I would seek unanimous consent to introduce a special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the upper gallery, we have the students and teachers from Francis Howe High School. If they could please stand. There we go. This is one of the largest school districts in my Senate district, Mr. President. I am thrilled that they are coming down, and not only are they being introduced here, but I'm going to go down and have lunch with them. So I apologize in advance that I'll be missing some of the debate, but I do want to hear their input, because generally that's where I get some of the best ideas from my district, Mr. President. And I would ask that the Senate body please make them feel welcome.
Well, the guests of the Senate 23rd, make them feel welcome in the Senate today. Have a great day. This is a neat place to go to work, that's for sure. Senator Buchanan, you still have the floor, you and Senator Callaway?
Yes.
Proceed.
Okay, so anyway, the thing is that if we pass this law with your amendment, now there is an expectation that motorcyclists could ride on the shoulder. Right now, it's against the law to ride on the shoulder.
Only if the traffic is
right. I understand that. But you never know when the traffic's going to be low or slow. And
let us have order in the Senate. Order in the Senate. Proceed with your debate.
So you never know when that's going to happen. So you have to assume that it will happen, because right now, is it not true, motorcycles may not ride on the shoulder. Neither can you drive on the shoulder. And there's a good reason for that.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Phelps, what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, would you lay this bill in the informal calendar, please?
It will be placed on a formal calendar. Senator from Cole. Senator from the second, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
The order, hearing no objection, the order of business reports standing committees. The Senator from the second.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on General Laws, to which was referred House Committee Substitute House Bills 1729, 1621, and 1436, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Onder, Chairman.
Senator from Boone.
President, your Committee on Government Reform has a report.
Senator, report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Government Reform, to which was referred House Bill 1578, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Rowden, Chairman.
Senator from the second.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on second reading.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on second reading. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2001.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2001, an act to appropriate money to the Board of Fund Commissioners for the cost of issuing and processing state water pollution control boards et al.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2002.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2002, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2003.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2003, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Higher Education.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2004.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2004, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Revenue, the Department of Transportation, and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2005.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2005, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Office of Administration et al.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2006.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2006, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Conservation, and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2007.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2007, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Economic Development et al.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2008.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2008, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Public Safety and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2009.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2009, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Corrections and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2010.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2010, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Mental Health, the Department of Health and Senior Services, and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2011.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2011, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, and distributions of the Department of Social Services and the several divisions and programs thereof.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2012.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2012, an act to appropriate money for expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Chief Executive's Office and the Mansion et al.
Appropriations. House Committee Substitute House Bill 2013.
House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2013, an act to appropriate money for the real property leases, related services, utilities, systems, furniture, structural modifications, and related expenses for the several departments of state government.
Appropriations, and Mr. President, please refer Senate Resolution 1591 to Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution, and Ethics.
It'll be so referred. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, Senator, go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from Barton.
On Commerce, Consumer Protection, Energy, and the Environment will convene at 1 p.m. in the Senate lounge. And I appreciate you giving me the first announcement, Mr. President.
Further announcements. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, may I inquire of you?
State your inquiry.
Did you realize you recognized the senator from Barton before the majority leader?
I did. And I do.
Too bad about both of your legislative efforts for the rest of the year. On a serious note, Mr. President, my announcement is the Senate prayer breakfast is at 7:30. That's 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning in the Bingham Gallery, 7:30 sharp. Reverend Gock and others would appreciate any senators who would like to come and participate.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator McCole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned until 1400 this day. Recess motion until 1400 this day.
The Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day. All those of opinion that motion shall prevail say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is in recess.